Chapter 16. Two alternators slipped a thumb-sized shock stick up her left sleeve and a garrote wire up her right, and grinned like a barbarian, all her square white teeth displayed. "How do I look?" she asked. "Think I can pass for a LaSalle native?" "For approximately 20 seconds," said Nine Foxglove, zipping up her tactical catsuit. "Which is all you need, thanks Starlight. You look absurd. But absurd will work for 20 seconds of fooling that station's customs officers while Five Filament and I get into their ductwork." Two Alternator wrinkled her nose. "You're the ex-information officer. You should be doing the persuasion," she said, "especially if you're going to tell me I'm doing it wrong."
"I would," Nine Foxglove said, "but they know my face just a bit too well."
"You didn't mention you'd been burned here when I signed on to this job," said Two Alternator, suspiciously.
"She has a very distinctive face," said Five Filament. He shoved a knife into his boot. "I've never stolen anything from a space station before. This is going to be fun."
Excerpt from Fulcrum, first in the series of Takes-Kalonley popular novels by the Western Arc-born writer, Five Spear. Top panels, three across page. First panel. Captain Cameron's ship approaches the underside of the Takes-Kalonley warship we saw on the previous splash page. It is so big, it doesn't look real. Second panel. Close-up of Cameron's hands on the navigation controls, with the glowing echo of Shadramov helping him steer. Through the cockpit window, the warship has turned into a metal backdrop, super decorative, with way too many flourishes, and also energy cannons like black eyes. Third panel. Cameron and Shadramov have slipped past the ship and into the black. It recedes into the distance. They are unnoticed. Cameron. Thought bubble on third panel.
"There's better stars out here than the ones the Empire sees, or the stations ever thought to look for."
Graphic story script for The Perilous Frontier, Volume 10. Distributed from local small printer, Adventure Bleak, on Tier 9, LaSalle Station. 8 Antidote didn't dream, and was glad of it. He didn't remember falling asleep, only remembered waking. It wasn't dawn yet. He'd slept in his clothes at his desk, his face pillowed on his hands, and woken himself up an hour or so later. He'd been thinking when he fell asleep, having said goodnight to Five Agate and the Emperor herself and gone back to his rooms. He'd tried watching holoprod shows, but he couldn't concentrate on any of them. He felt full up with ideas, with concept, with horror, like he was a supersaturated solution and at any moment he'd crystallize and suddenly understand. He almost did. He kept coming back to, "I think they might be a kind of person," in Mahit Dasmar's voice. To, "they don't care about death the way we do, but they do understand death." To what Three Seagrass had said, "they talk." And that had been obvious, of course they'd talk. They had spaceships and weapons and a society. Of course they talked. Maybe the important part wasn't that they talked, but that they talked back. Maybe they thought humans might be a kind of person, too. He'd been thinking that when he fell asleep, probably. And now it was still full dark and he was wide awake, and the only things that were illuminated in his room were the camera eyes, how they glinted in moonlight. The city, watching him, keeping track, like the sunlit kept track. How the whole of the city knew where he was. Even if where he was, in a horrible subway derailment that wasn't supposed to be able to happen, that might have been his own fault, meant for him, meant to hurt him. In his own room in Palace Earth. The idea was already all through him, like he'd dreamed himself full of it, without knowing or remembering the dream. It was exactly how he'd woken up understanding how the fleet captain Nine Hibiscus had won the battle at Kuran. The idea was,
they might be a kind of person. The idea was 8 Antidote thought he might know what kind of person. Start with the sunlit, and the way they could see through all the camera eyes of the city. The sunlit were a complicated kind of person altogether. They were Texcalan Litzlem, of course they were, as human as 8 Antidote. But they moved together. They reacted together. They all saw through the same eyes that weren't human eyes, but machine eyes, and that was why they moved and reacted together. They used the same algorithm process as the subway did, except they were people, instead of a scheduling AI. They had become as good at it as they were when the new algorithmic principles were rolled out across Texcalan, under Science Minister Ten Pearl. Everyone knew that. That now the sunlit could see through the camera eyes all together, like one mind, made of 1,000 observing pieces. And if there was a human kind of person who could do that, could have many eyes and move all together easily and simply, it was easy to imagine other kinds of persons who'd be better at it than the sunlit ever had been. Almost 8 Antidote lost the shape of the idea, distracted by the vivid and surprising realization that he didn't know how a person became one of the sunlit. Not at all. But he made himself not think about it. Not right now. If there was a human kind of person who could share vision and intention, and there could be other kinds of persons who would be better at it, who weren't human at all, then they could be so much better at it that they wouldn't care about just one of them dying. Like Envoy 3 Seagrass had said, they'd know about dying, but not care the same way. If he was right, even as much as he'd been right about Kuren, almost right with one piece missing, if he was right, he had to tell someone. The enemy moved the way they did, destroyed supply lines the way they did, showed up in unexpected locations too fast the way they did in all of those strategy room simulations because they had only one mind. If he was right, and he thought he was. The person he had to tell was the Minister of War, because if the enemy thought all together, like one giant extra powerful group of sunlit, then that was why 3 Azimuth and all the generals of the fleet couldn't figure out how to go around them. He had to tell her right now. So what if it was hours before dawn? He knew what the Ministry of War was like at the moment. He'd shadowed 3 Azimuth for 2 whole days. If she was asleep, he'd eat a whole reflecting pool's worth of lotuses. Mahit and 3 Seagrass stood on the bridge in front of 9 Hibiscus, still trying, or at least Mahit was trying, who knew what 3 Seagrass was thinking, hearing a Yautlek of the Texcalanli fleet say such poetic words as, "I am prepared to sink my hands into their heart and rip it out," a statement out of an epic conquest poem, said so casually and easily, the absolute weight of Texcalan's narratives settling over Mahit like a shroud she'd never really taken off. To figure out what to say. There was no immediate word from 20 Cicada, down on Paloa 2 with his precious, absurd box of fungus, trying to take what she and 3 Seagrass had established with the aliens about maybe killing us isn't all right, at least not indiscriminately, and link it up to whatever he wanted to explain about the fungal infiltrate. There was no message at all, and Mahit could see how the lack of one made 9 Hibiscus brittle and sharp, willing to contemplate the total destruction of a planetary system. Have we ever loved someone like that? She thought, not quite a question. Enough to want to kill a planet in revenge for them?
Not a whole planet, Iskander said, and she rather wished she hadn't asked.
What counted as killing a planet, anyway? Was it the death fire of fleet bombs? Or was it also the gentle, wide, killing strong jaws of Texcalan, wrapped around her own heart, where Lascelles should be? She said, Yautlek, I do think we were making some kind of progress, another few hours or days, and maybe...
Oh, I don't doubt you, Ambassador,
9 Hibiscus told her. But you're not one of my soldiers, are you?
I don't expect you to understand. Eventually, there are points where we in command ask our soldiers to trust us, not only with their lives, but with their decisions. The 10th has been waiting a long time.
Mahit wanted to tell her, "You're the one who dragged us up here to talk to a kid over infofiche message. We were working."
Was about to, even with Yaskander on the back of her tongue slowing her, warning her, when the comms officer Tufom interrupted them both to say, "Yautlek, message. 20 cicada," Nine Hibiscus asked.
Mahit winced at the naked hope in her voice, saw Three Seagrass wince too.
"No," Tufom said. "It's 40 Oxide's flagship, the Chatoyant Sirocco. The 17th Legion is under direct attack. I think the enemy knows we know where they are. The 17th is losing shards, fast."
8 Antidote didn't bother changing clothes or telling anyone where he was going. He just put on his shoes, gray spy shoes to go with spy trousers and tunic, brushed his hair and rebraided it into a long queue, and took the tunnels, like he was going to visit 11 Laurel, before any of this had really gotten started. The tunnels between Palace Earth and the Ministry felt soothing and familiar, except for how every small noise, every shift of dust, made him shiver and walk a little faster. He'd never been here at this hour. Even trying to sing the walking marching song of palace architecture to himself, as many roots in the ground as blooms into the sky, felt like a kid's defense against monsters that might be under his bed, or in his secret underground tunnels. That was funny, except in all the ways it wasn't. What would happen if an incendiary device went off down here? He didn't want to think of it. He climbed the ladder and came up through the trap door in the basement. There was no one there to meet him, and he was suddenly glad. He didn't want anyone to know he was here except maybe Three Azimuth. He wanted to hand her this idea. Her, and 11 Laurel, if he was with her, that would show how good a student 8 Antidote was. And no one else. Not let it escape until the 6 outreaching palms had decided what to do about it. But if he was going to get all the way into her office without having to explain himself, even at this hour when there'd be fewer guards but more suspicious ones, he needed to be a spy for real. The kind of spy who could sneak, as well as talk and remember and keep his own secrets. The camera eyes would see him. That was just how the city was. But people, except for Sunlit, weren't camera eyes. And he was small. He could hide in corners. He could be a piece of dust, a snatch of light reflected on a floor. He could be nothing at all. Someone who was supposed to be here, supposed to be where he was. Someone unimportant. A hallway cleaner or a late shift cadet doing inspections. He was too young to be either of those. But if he thought of himself as one of them, the hallway cleaner was easier. A person who was meant to be in the Ministry of War, making it look sparkling and new for the morning sunrise to glance off of. He headed toward Three Azimuth's office directly. The camera eyes and the Ministry's building security AI would have seen him take this trip multiple times and not suspect anything unusual. He was following a pattern the algorithm would expect from him. And if he saw a person who wasn't a Sunlit, who didn't think he should be here, he'd either explain, or he'd slip by them, pretending very hard to be a hallway cleaner. Thinking he was a hallway cleaner, believing it. That was what spies in stories did. He practiced believing he was a hallway cleaner until he reached the outside of Three Azimuth's office. He hadn't needed to talk to anyone. The only times he'd seen Ministry employees, he'd waited in a shadow and let them go past him. But now, right outside her office in the center of the 6 outreaching palms, right down the hall from it, enough to see the light from under its door and know he'd been right about the Minister for War not sleeping tonight, he heard voices. Raised, strained voices, drifting into the hall from that sliver of light. He could interrupt them. He needed to tell Three Azimuth what he expected. He really, really did. But instead, he held himself very still and made his breathing almost not breathing at all, No interruptions of sound or betrayal that he was there. And he listened. It was very hard, it turned out, to stop being a spy once you'd gotten used to being one. And Eight Antidote had gotten very used to being one. He wasn't sure whose fault that was. His or his ancestor the Emperor's, either genetically or how he'd been raised, or the Emperor herself's when she'd given him that spear point.
Time to wait. I'm not going to stand idly by while shard pilots come to me hardly able to stop screaming long enough to make their warning coherent. Whatever else is going on out there, they are killing the fleet's soldiers. And unless we unhook the shards from their proprioception link, the whole universe is going to be exquisitely aware of it.
That was Three Azimuth. That was Three Azimuth, sounding more viciously animated than Eight Antidote had ever heard her. Three Azimuth, Minister of War, explaining what he could only think must be the shard trick. And if the shard pilots were somehow all linked together so that they heard each other die, as if they were sunlit, except broken. Sunlit didn't hear each other die, at least as far as Eight Antidote knew. How hadn't the Minister of War come to the same conclusions Eight Antidote had? That the aliens they were fighting were also linked together. He took a step forward, toward the door, ready to interrupt and explain his idea. And heard 11 Laurel say,
"Sending our ships down to that planet will surely expose our people to whatever fungal disease it is teeming with. Really, Minister?"
He didn't move. Didn't open the door. Wasn't sure about fungal disease. The envoy and Dismar hadn't mentioned anything like that. "A sufficient number of nuclear shatter bombs will wipe out even very determined fungi," said Three Azimuth. "I'm not ordering an attack, Undersecretary. I'm ordering a heart strike. Wipe that one colony off the skin of the universe and see what sort of negotiations we get to have after they know what we can do." A quiet, awful pause. Eight Antidote thought about what happened to a planet when its atmosphere was full of radioisotopes. He had to think back a long way. Tix Kalan didn't do that kind of thing anymore. It was too... A planet didn't come back from that. He'd read a whole codex book about it 2 years ago, when one of his tutors had decided he was old enough to learn about the atrocities Tix Kalan had smartly given up committing. Into that silence, 11 Laurel said,
"Minister, speaking as the Undersecretary of the Third Palm, and nominally your expert on military intelligence praxis, negotiation is not going to be what you'll get after you order the fleet to bomb a populated planetary settlement into radioactive winter. You'll get, surrender, perhaps, or retreat, or retrenchment, a war that goes on for decades out there in that little ugly spot of black."
"Are you telling me it is a terrible idea, Undersecretary?"
"No,"
11 Laurel said, and Eight Antidote could imagine his smile. It would be the same one he used when Eight Antidote had gotten most of a strategy puzzle right, pleased but smug too.
"I don't think it's necessarily a terrible idea at all, merely that you're unlikely to have negotiation be one of your outcomes. But then negotiation's never been what you've liked, has it? Not on Nakar. You prefer efficacy, Minister."
"And if I do,
then you do."
Eight Antidote felt like he should be sick to his stomach, and wasn't. He wasn't sure if his stomach was near enough to him to be sick with. Everything was very distant and very frightening. The Minister of War was talking about killing a whole planetary system, and 11 Laurel was agreeing. And if this was what being in the fleet was really like, he was sorry for wanting it. Sorry for wanting to dance ships into being in a simulation room. Sorry for wanting to solve all the puzzles of command. Sorry for not thinking about how shard pilots might scream when their fellow pilots died. If he cried, he'd be overheard. So he didn't.
"It has to be above board,"
11 Laurel was saying.
"From the Emperor herself, No shard trick to get ahead of the process.
The Emperor still doesn't know about the side effects of the proprioception link, then. That's what you mean, Undersecretary.
A dry snatch of laughter.
Yes, I assume that is what I mean. I'd prefer to keep as much proprietary knowledge inside war as possible, Minister. In our current diminished state, after what One Lightning attempted, let us not give Her Illuminate Majesty any reasons to send information or science in here to take over our decision-making.
Sometimes, said Three Azimuth, with a tiny sigh that made all the hairs on Eight Antidote's arms stand up. I understand why Nine Hibiscus prefers information to you Third Palmers. Even so. Above board, as you recommend. It won't be a problem, the message is already prepared.
I do admire you, Minister. Enormously. My best student is willing to die in executing this plan, if it means we get what we need.
16 Moonrise?
Yes. Right alongside the Yautlek. Two flagships ought to be sufficient to carve open a space in the enemy lines for the requisite number of shatter bombers to get through. Don't you think?
Eight Antidote had heard enough. He imagined how many bombs it would take to kill a planetary system, and how many bodies would be on that planet, even if they were all one mind like he thought they were, and he didn't want it to happen. It wasn't... Just losing some shard pilots made other shard pilots cry. What would it be like to lose a whole planet if you felt all the deaths?
They understand death. They just don't care about it the same way, Dismar had said. But that didn't mean they didn't care about it at all.
Eight Antidote turned away, back down the hall, and headed into the tunnels. He was going to tell someone his idea, he was. But he was going to tell the Emperor 19 ads, so that she didn't send that order that Three Azimuth wanted her to send.
What does Fleet Captain 40 Oxide want? Nine Hibiscus said, her voice gone very even, very serene. The voice of a person calculating lines of attack. Mahit wasn't sure she understood the question. What could a fleet captain under attack possibly want but for the attack to end with him victorious? But Two Foam seemed to.
It's not an all-ships distress call, Yautlek. It's a request for information. Have we done anything that would provoke an intensification of the guerrilla strikes to direct engagement? Do you have more specific instructions? Their comms officer, 9C-Ice, is waiting for our reply on open channel.
Before 9 Hibiscus could answer, 3 Seagrass, her voice low and urgent, and just as calm as the Yautlek's, said,
Before you answer, Yautlek, find out if any of the other legions in your 6 are under similar attack or have changed position. I suspect this is not an isolated incident.
9 Hibiscus looked at her with a weight of evaluation that made Mahit want to sink down under it, crushed by heavy scrutiny, heavier evaluation. But 3 Seagrass didn't flinch, and 9 Hibiscus, as if satisfied by that lack, said,
Two Foam, do so. Status from all captains.
It didn't take long. The order must have been a commonplace one. Two Foam reached above her head, her hands dancing in the holograph display of the fleet, and transmuted incoming messages into a pattern of light, a stylized representation of what each legion in this sector was doing, how they moved, how many of their ships were under attack. Even Mahit could see that the 24th Legion, 16 Moonrise's Legion, had begun a slow, inexorable approach toward the aliens' planetary system, and that, at the same time, or shortly after, the aliens had redoubled their attack on the nearest legion to that system, the 17th. Cause and effect, as plain as sunlight.
They understand retaliation just fine, she found herself saying. Yautlek, with the greatest of respect, I know I'm not Tix Kalanli, or one of your soldiers, and I know your people are dying. But if this is how the aliens react to the suggestion of approach, think of what they will do if you actually signal an attack.
Also, 3 Seagrass added, viciously dry, I doubt that you ordered 16 Moonrise to take her ship in that close, did you?
Mahit had never seen any Tixkalan Leetslam smile like a stationer who hadn't lived near or known stationers. But Nine Hibiscus did it now, bared her teeth, her lips curling back.
Not a smile, Yaskander told her. A threat. A displeasure. A very Tixkalani expression, even if it looks like how we'd smile if we wanted someone to know we were going to enjoy hurting them.
Close enough, Mahid told him.
How right you are, envoy, Nine Hibiscus said, still showing her teeth. But you have reason to make me mistrust my fleet captain, do you not? You two, the spook and her pet?
You're the one who asked for information services, Three Seagrass said. Yautlek, it is you who commands me, just as you command the fleet captain.
And how do I know, envoy, if the attack on the 17th is due to Fleet Captain 16 Moonrise's maneuvers, or something you and Ambassador Dismar said, down on Paloa 2.
You don't, said Mahit. And neither do we. Three Seagrass looked at her, flash fire quick, her mouth twisted into the same amazed wry expression she'd worn when Mahit had curled her fingers up inside her just so, which was also the same expression she'd worn when she had watched Mahit turn the performance of barbarism directly against the Minister of Science, Ten Pearl, at the very first event they'd ever been to together. That same pleasure, a twisted amazement and joy, a kind of possessive wanting. Mahit couldn't think about how it made her feel. She didn't have time to feel anything that strong, that disarraying of the pattern of the world.
The ambassador is right, Three Seagrass said. I would not promise you anything I could not guarantee. It may be our fault. It may be the 24th Legion. It may be something else we cannot even imagine. Our enemy is otherwise than any alien species I know of.
Clipped and vicious, Nine Hibiscus said, For what did I bring you here then, envoy? If you cannot make these aliens make sense.
For the attempt, said Three Seagrass.
At which Two Foam, apparently done with philosophy, negotiations, and barbarians all, said,
The chatoyant Sirocco is still waiting for an answer.
Loud enough that Mahit almost flinched. Quickly, Mahit said,
Ask the Emperor. Let this be, if it is to be, a destruction that is from the heart of Tixkalan.
8 Antidote had accesses he hadn't known he had. He'd never thought to use them, never thought, before this morning, it was morning now, sort of, a gray morning that was going to rain at any minute, the sunrise mostly disguised. To walk through Palace Earth, and ask locked doors to open for him. To open for him because he was the Imperial Heir 8 Antidote, and his cloudhook was the second strongest key in all of Tixkalan. Unless his accesses had been limited because he was a child, which he was sure they were, somewhere, but he wasn't finding the edge. He kept not finding the edge, where someone, even the city or the Imperial Security AI, or a dumb locked door that needed a physical key, would stop him. He wanted... It was awful and stupid and unfair, but he wanted someone to stop him. That would mean it wasn't his responsibility anymore. That would mean someone else, someone grown up entirely, would be the one in charge of doing this, of stopping a planetary genocide. Except, the grown-ups were in charge, and so far they weren't stopping anything at all. Palace East opened up like a flower blooming. 8 Antidote walked as deep as the Imperial apartments went, past the post of the keeper of the Imperial inkstand, past the corridor that led to his own rooms, past door after door, and into the Emperor's own suite. He was bracing himself to try the last door, the one he'd never been through, the one that would lead into 19 Adza's bedroom, her private space.
when a hand fell onto his shoulder and he cried out, surprised, and forgot everything about how to fight off a kidnapper, just stood still, waiting to see if he'd be punished for trespassing. It wasn't a kidnapper, of course. It was Her Brilliance the Emperor, all in white, bare feet soundless on the floor. "Little spy," she said. It was not an accusation, more like an invitation to explain himself. "Your Brilliance," he said and turned around. Her hand stayed on his shoulder. He tried not to cringe or pull away. "I'm sorry for disturbing you this early." "No, you're not," said 19 Ads. "You cut a swath through all of the palace's security systems. You want very much to disturb me. Now, would you like to tell me why?" Her attention felt like a gravitational field, something that pulled a person in. "I was at the Ministry of War," he said. He wanted to get this right the first time, to not hesitate or hint. "I overheard the minister and Third Undersecretary 11 Laurel discussing using nuclear shatter bombs on an entire inhabited planetary system full of our enemies. They're going to do it. They're going to ask you to approve it. They're going to ask you to tell them to kill an entire planet and poison it so nothing ever grows there again."
"And you came to... what? To warn me?"
Her face was expressionless. Eight Antidote felt completely lost. Why wasn't she reacting? Why wasn't she making it stop?
"Yes," he tried. "And to tell you that I think that the aliens, that our enemies, that maybe they're all one mind, like the sunlit sometimes are, and killing a planet of them would be... It's so awful, I can't think about it, Your Brilliance."
"It is awful," said 19 Ads. "Have you had breakfast yet? Come, sit with me a minute. I've got cassava and new cheese breads. Your ancestor the Emperor liked them. Do you too?" Eight Antidote did. They were one of his favorite foods, the delicious round cassava shell around the slightly melted, gooey cheese center, warm from the oven. But he couldn't imagine eating. He was sick to his stomach. He didn't understand anything about how 19 Ads was handling this. But he sat down next to her at a table by one of her enormous windows and took a cassava bread from the platter of them that was there. He picked it apart with his fingers.
"Why aren't you making them stop?"
he asked, finally. And 19 Ads sighed, just a faint sound, her shoulders settling back. She bit into a cassava bread, chewed and swallowed while 8 Antidote stared at her. Then she said,
"I'm not making them stop, because I believe it's the right idea."
He tore another piece of dough off his bread and squished it in his fingers.
"Why?"
he said, plaintive, hating himself for sounding plaintive.
"They're people. Not humans, but people. I really think so. And you said it was awful to kill a planet. I just heard you."
"I did say it was awful," the Emperor told him. "And I believe it is. It is a terrible thing to do, and a terrible decision to make. But that's what emperors are for, 8 Antidote. Terrible decisions. I'd rather... Oh, I'll tell you the truth, my little spy. You're going to have to do this yourself eventually, so the truth is better. I'd rather have a Pyrrhic victory. Display just what Tix Kalan is capable of. Smash a living, beautiful planet full of people, and yes, they probably are people, but not the kind of people we can understand. Smash it to dust and death rain. I'd rather one act of horror than an endless war of attrition, losing our people and theirs on and on and on, like a suppurating wound at the edge of the empire, forever." She wasn't eating her pastry. She swallowed like her throat was as dry as 8 Antidote's was. "Sometimes it is better to cauterize," she said.
Nine hibiscus hissed through her teeth. Mahit wanted to flinch, or step in front of Three Seagrass in case the suggestion of asking the Emperor for permission to begin all-out war, all strategy over, was so deep a breach of propriety that a Yautlek would... She didn't know. Have Three Seagrass shot? Court-martialed? Assigned to one of those glittering shard fighters to lead the assault? She wished she could stop imagining worse ways for the narrative to play out. But there were so few better ones that she could see, and Yaskander was a shiver quiet hum of pain in her wrists, all barely contained waiting that wasn't patience as much as preparation for some unknown last-ditch action. But then Nine Hibiscus said, "Tell 40 Oxide to return fire, but not pursue." Two Foam nodded. A quick acknowledgement. Mahit tried to breathe in the space between the Yautlek sentences. She couldn't inhale and exhale fast enough. "Not pursue yet," Nine Hibiscus went on, "but prepare to on my order, and send a fast courier to the city. I want the Emperor's voice on this order right along with mine." Then she looked back at Three Seagrass and said, much softer, hardly loud enough for Mahit to pick up, "I've always said that information was better than the Palmers, if you had to do counterintelligence outside the fleet, because information's pre-fucked. No chance of getting yourselves enamored with barbarians for the first time and forgetting what the fleet's for. You're already corrupt. But I didn't ever expect one of you to bring me a barbarian who uses Tixkalani Imperial Protocol to prove her points."
"Ambassador Dismar is unique," said Three Seagrass. And Mahit tried to decide who had insulted her and if she should mind. She'd won, hadn't she? Briefly. She'd bought them time. Time for 20 Cicada to keep talking. Time for something other than all of Tixkalan's military bent to inexorable and total destruction. Unnuanced. Beautiful. An elimination of confusion. Of incomprehension. A loss.
"A loss for whom?" Iskander murmured. Mahit wasn't sure, or couldn't tell him, or he already knew. A loss for her, for the spaces of language that let a person like her imagine Tixkalan and still be a stationer. The idea that there might be something other than Tixkalan when one said the word for world. One of the other officers on the bridge said,
"Yautlek, a ship has come through the jump gate. Behind us."
"An enemy ship?" asked Nine Hibiscus. And Mahit thought, ice clear and sudden. If it is one of the enemy, coming through the Unhamamut gate from the stationer's side, then they have already taken Lassell. And I never even knew when all my people were killed. I was here, talking to their murderers, and I never knew. If she breathed, she'd hyperventilate. If she moved, that thought would be true and real, and she'd have to keep breathing afterward.
"No,"
said the officer. And Mahit exhaled so hard that she almost missed what he said next, lost in a sudden, imago-doubled flood of relief. A relief which vanished almost as soon as it rocked through her, leaving her shaking. Because the officer had put the incoming ship's wide-channel broadcast on full audio, and the voice which was filling the bridge of the wait for the wheel belonged to Daj Taratz, the cell counselor for the miners, first amongst six. And he was demanding to be brought on board to speak with Mahit herself. Cauterize? Aid Antidote didn't know what to say. He didn't know how to say it. How did he tell the Emperor herself that she was wrong? How could she be this wrong? "I don't understand," he managed. You told me all those things about how my ancestor the Emperor wanted a Tixkalan that could have another 80 years of peace. And you want to do this anyway? It's..."
"Go on," said 19 ads. "Say what you think."
It's a planetary genocide,
said Aide Antidote, and said it angrily, and didn't burst into tears at all. That icy, clear place beyond fear was back with him.
I don't care if it cauterizes. If you think it would cauterize. If someone murdered my home, I would fight them forever.
I do think you would, 19 Ad said. She wasn't reacting to him. He didn't know what he could say to make her stop being so calm, so already decided.
I would have, when I was 11. Maybe when I was twice 11, too. But that was before I met Six Direction. We have to think beyond ourselves and what we'd want. That's what I learned from him, what I learned from watching him rule, and watching the end of his reign.
This is an ugly decision to make, and it hurts, Aide Antidote, and I'm sorry you had to find out about it in secret. I would have preferred to have been with you, so you could ask questions and I could have explained.
You said, before, in my bedroom.
He tried to remember the words, the exact words. It would have been easier if 19 Ads had recited a poem, but she hadn't. She just told him,
you said that Six Directions Takes Kalan was an empire strong enough to be at peace. How are we going to get there from killing a planet?
19 Ads lifted one shoulder in a shrug and put it down again. You're really not like him, she said. Or you're like he was when he was a child, and I never knew him as a child. He only told me stories. I'm glad you're not, you know. I meant what I said in your bedroom. I'd rather have a clever, annoying successor than a dullard. Even if you are in my living room trying to make me feel ashamed of killing our enemies viciously enough that they will leave us alone. Your ancestor would have done what I am doing. We did it together, once. On that campaign. The one in the hollow that I gave you.
You killed a planet?
A city, it. Came to the same thing, little spy. There and then, it came to the same thing. He could imagine it. The two of them on their horses. The bloody spears. He wondered how you killed a city without killing the planet along with it, and whether he'd know how when he was grown. He said,
you keep saying I'm not my ancestor. I know I'm not. I'm a clone. Most people are clones. It's not weird.
The Emperor put her hand on Aide Antidote's wrist. Her skin felt like skin, warm and human, just like his. You're exactly you, she said. But you could have been something else, and I didn't want that for you. Aide Antidote was sure that he was being distracted, being led away from the horrible and certain knowledge that even now, there was probably a message on an infofiche stick going toward the spaceport, on a fastest of fast courier ships, jump gate to jump gate, and only 5.5 hours between here and genocide. But he couldn't help asking. He felt like he'd choke if he didn't ask. He said, what would I have been? And waited. 19 Ads closed her eyes. The lids were unpainted. She never really painted herself. Aide Antidote had always suspected that the white suits and the sun spear throne were enough decoration for her. Unpainted and thin. Every poem he knew said that emperors never slept. Maybe it was true. Her eyes were still closed when she said, like the beginning of a story, the preamble to an epic. Your ancestor, the Emperor Six Direction, loved many people in his time. Me, his Kreish sister, Eight Loop, who you're named for, who is your legal guardian now. Countless others. But once he loved the ambassador from Lascelle Station.
Mahit Dismar?
Aide Antidote asked, confused. No, said 19 Ads. Stars, no. He met her 3 times, I think. 3 times I know about. he loved her predecessor, little spy, Yaskandar Agavin. And I... Oh, Yaskandar was so easy to love. Like drinking too much and not minding being drunk. Like taking a strike force over a hill and not knowing if there's an ambush on the other side.
He died, though, said Aid Antidote, and wondered if he should be offering condolences.
Adults and the way adults loved had never made sense to him. What the Emperor was describing didn't sound like love at all. 19 Ads nodded. Her eyes were still closed. Yes. He died. I helped kill him, for what that's worth, which was like killing a city or a planet. There and then, it really did come to the same thing. Do you want to know why?
That's a stupid question, Your Brilliance.
She laughed. The sound was fragile and strange. Of course it is. I set you up for it. But you do want to know, don't you?
Yes.
He did. He also didn't, but he felt like being surprised with it later would be worse.
Because on the cell station, where Yaskandar and Mahit both come from, there is a technology that they use to put the mind of one's predecessor inside the mind of the successor. To share, Mahit said. To have memory live forever. And Yaskandar loved your ancestor, the Emperor.
I don't know, little spy. If a barbarian like Yaskandar could believe in Six Directions takes Kalan. But he believed in Six Direction. And when your ancestor was old and dying slowly, Yaskandar offered him one of those machines. Imago machines, they call them. A way to record himself and put himself inside a new body like a ghost and have 80 times 80 years of peace. There was a rock in his stomach, and he hadn't even eaten his cassava and cheese. It'd need to be a close body, wouldn't it? He said. His voice sounded thin, babyish. He couldn't care. A clone, if he could get one.
Yes, said 19 Ads.
A clone would work very well. You're quite like him, except in all the ways you're not. He swallowed, dry mouthed, and almost choked.
What would I have been like?
The Emperor had stopped looking at whatever was on the inside of her eyelids and was looking at him instead. He wanted to squirm away. She said, I don't know.
Not you. Not Six Direction either. Something untenable. Untenable to me, to Taixkalan.
And yet it was tenable to her to kill a whole planet to maybe stop a war. Eight Antidote didn't understand. He didn't want to understand. He was glad he wasn't some ghost, some half-thing, his ancestor and himself wrapped up together because he was himself. And he didn't want to understand how 19 Ads could kill her friend to save a kid and kill a planet to maybe do nothing but kill a planet.
I'm not him, he said. I'm not Six Direction.
You aren't, 19 Ads said. You are the Imperial Heir, Eight Antidote. Nothing more, nothing less.
You let me be myself, he said,
making sure.
I gave you the opportunity when it would have been taken away, yes. Then I am myself, and I think you're wrong, Your Brilliance. You're wrong to go along with Three Azimuth's idea. This isn't my Taixkalan, the one you're building.
And somehow he found that he could stand up and turn his back on his Emperor and walk straight-spined right out of her suite, leaving his uneaten breakfast behind him.
Fire on that ship, said Nine Hibiscus, with the brittle determination that accompanied making an unwise choice that nevertheless felt better than making no choice at all.
She knew this kind of thinking. She thought she'd grown out of it long before she'd been a fleet captain, let alone a Yautlek. It was the sort of thinking that obliterated possibilities, unbalanced worlds. 20 Cicada would be disappointed. 20 Cicada wasn't here.
Don't,
Mahit Dismar said, her face twisted in some incomprehensible expression, grief or anger or another barbarian emotion that made no sense.
Yautlek, please don't. He is... That's Dashtarats. He's 1/6 of our government, please.
Such a simple request. She should deny it. Everything 16 Moonrise had warned her about, the compromising of information by LaSalle agents, the infiltration of stationer concerns into what should have remained fleet business. All of that was apparently true, by virtue of the presence of this barbarian in his little ship, demanding Ambassador Dismar. And yet here was that selfsame Ambassador Dismar, begging for his life, for the life of some member of her government.
Hold,
Nine Hibiscus said to Five Thistle, whose hands were already finished targeting the small skiff containing this Dashtarats.
Why shouldn't I fire, Ambassador? That ship wouldn't be the first stationer vessel caught in the crossfire of this war.
The Ambassador probably hadn't known that. She flinched. Everything was so visible on her face, so clear. And yet her expression wasn't anything that Nine Hibiscus was sure she recognized.
He asked to speak to me, said Dismar. I am duty-bound to defend him, to preserve the life of my fellow citizen.
Also, it's rude, said the Envoy Three Seagrass, perfectly bland, to fire on someone who announced himself as friendly.
Nine Hibiscus wanted so badly for her to be wrong, for the both of them to be wrong, to be the sort of fleet captain who wouldn't care if they were wrong. But she wasn't.
Bring him on board, she said to Five Thistle instead. On board and to me in restraints. I don't trust this timing, Envoy, Ambassador. I don't trust it at all.